Hello, and welcome to an EDUCAUSE podcast. You can find more podcasts like this at www.educause.edu/podcasts. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for EDUCAUSE. On this podcast, we bring you a keynote address from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Southwestern Regional Conference. Our speaker is Darcy W. Hardy, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs and Executive Director of the UT Telecampus at the University of Texas System. Her speech is entitled, "The Forever Changing Role of IT in Online Education."
Thank you for inviting me to be here. I'm going to start off by saying that I'm not an IT person, and I was trying to think of how I would do this because most of you are IT, correct? Okay. I come from more of an academic online side of the house, but I am not a technologist. I was, at one point, an instructional technologist. My PhD was in instructional technology in 1992, but that technology that I used was 12-inch LaserDisc. Anybody remember the LaserDisc? Several years ago, I convinced my husband that we could get rid of the LaserDisc player. But I do believe that it's probably in his sort of electronic graveyard where he keeps all of these different electronics where he thinks he might be able to use pieces and parts of them at some point or another. I don't know about you, but in my house, and I don't know if it's something that's a gender thing or not, but my husband keeps everything like that, related to technology, related to electricity, whatever it is, because I can go into our garage right now and I can see so many extension cords that are frayed, but yet he keeps them because one day he might need to cut the plug off and splice it with something else. Is that something anybody else does? So I'm convinced that probably that LaserDisc player is somewhere in that graveyard of electronic things. The other thing that happens in my office, I am in the UT Telecampus, we use Blackboard, okay, as our CMS, and I have admin rights to that. This makes some people in my office very, very uncomfortable that I have admin rights. And although I'm not going to go in and do anything wrong, I think it just makes them uncomfortable because they've lost control and now the boss has access to what's going on inside of Blackboard. The other thing, the final thing I noticed was, you know, I really appreciate the fact that Xenda is sponsoring this session. I am not a technologist. I don't even understand what it is that they do. So just to put it in perspective, if you read what they do, and I'm happy that they're sponsoring this session, I certainly don't understand it. I am not a technologist. I am more on the academic side. I come from the online world, and so one of the reasons why I think I was asked to talk to you today is because we sort of need each other. I think we certainly need the IT side of the house to do what we do. You need us because we give you business and give you headaches probably with some of the things that we're doing. So this is not going to be a heavy talk. This is not going to be something that you're going to want to write things down necessarily, but I hope what happens at the end of this, that you walk out of here with some idea of maybe how we should be working together and maybe give you some insight on where we're headed in the future. I do think that a lot of times, and I wanted to quantify this by saying by some people, because I don't like blanket statements, but I think sometimes IT folks are misunderstood, and sometimes people don't really, I don't think they, not only do they not understand what it is that we do, they sometimes don't appreciate what we do. And so I think that that's one thing that we definitely have in common. So I'm going to jump in on some issues that I want to bring to your attention to talk about. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. I'd rather you not yell out liar in the middle of when I'm speaking. But if you want to debate these things, I'm open to it. I'm coming at this from a practitioner side, from an academic side, and most of what I talk about has to do with my observations of what I've seen not only happen, not so much in the University of Texas system, although that's part of it, but it's also in doing consulting for other universities who are getting involved in online education and how some of these things happen. So the first thing I want to bring up is just about the decision on which technology to buy, which one to support on a campus. How many of you are community college folks? Curious. How many are university? Okay. It's not that off balance. But I think regardless of which kind of campus you're working in, you come across these same issues. Now, I would argue that there are basically three groups on a campus who feel like it's their right to be the main decision maker when you're talking about technology. Would you agree that there are probably three groups? Okay, let's see if we agree on who those groups are. First, there's you. There are the IT folks, the CIO. If we're going to support it, by God, we're going to be the ones that make the decision. And I'm not knocking that. I feel like if you're given some piece of technology to support, you should have a say-so in how you're going to support it and whether you even purchase it in the first place. What I find interesting, though, is when it does come to outsourcing, Okay? There are some campuses that embrace the idea of outsourcing. But I can tell you about two different conversations that I've had that I still don't quite understand, and maybe you can help me understand them. I had a conversation one time, this is about 4 or 5 years ago, before we had data centers and things like that, and it was with a CIO who was actually supporting two different course management systems on the campus and not outsourcing the hosting of either one. So it had them both in-house. And I asked, you know, questions like about why don't you outsource this, why don't you think about this? And the answer that I got back was because I have to have control of the boxes. Does that ring true? I have to have control of the boxes. I'm not going to outsource this. The second conversation I had was actually with someone at one of our medical campuses. They had received a grant for a small project. And as part of that project, they were going to develop some online materials. So they wanted to have a CMS, a course management system. And they chose WebCT. And this was back in the day when, you know, different departments, they could have their own versions of these course management systems, and they weren't campus-wide. We were down talking to them about possibly, instead of running their own CMS, moving those to the central location of the UT telecampus instead of doing it on their own. And there was argument, you know, no, I can't do that. I have to have control. I have to have control. I have to have control. Then we found out it was for 20 students, 5 courses for this whole project. But yet it was like they were adamant about, you know, and this wasn't an IT person necessarily. It was an IT wannabe person that felt like, you know, having control of those boxes was so important. So I do agree that when you're talking about technology on a campus, that those that are involved in supporting it need to be at the table making the decision. Unfortunately, there are times when it's only the technology people making the decision.
You learn valuable techniques on how to respond when someone asks you where you went to school. Techniques like changing the subject.
Okay, so back to the technology decision. So you do have a right that IT people need to have a right for this technology decision, but I do think sometimes it is only the technology folks that make the decision, and that therefore aggravates the other people on the campus. And I don't know if you've experienced that, but I've seen it happen in multiple occasions. Then there's the faculty. The faculty will often say that if it's going to be for teaching or research, it's our decision. Now, how many of you have been in a situation, and I'm not knocking faculty, please, and I know all the people who are faculty here would never do this, but how many of you have been on your campus and you have a faculty member come back, perhaps a dean, a chair, someone who's in a position of some kind of power, and they come back and tell you that they have found this great new solution, and not only did they see it at the conference, but instead of charging the university, they went ahead and paid for it themselves to save the university money, and they brought it back and they want you to support it. Does that ever happen to anybody? Okay. In my office alone, it has driven them crazy in the past where I've gone somewhere and seen something and I come back and I'm like, man, we should be doing this. And it took several years for people to be able to stand up and go, no, we're not going to do that, Darcy. At the beginning, it was like, sure, you're the boss, we'll do it. And then everybody bitches and moans afterwards because they're having to do it. So while there's nothing wrong with new solutions, if the faculty are not in concert with technology folks to understand what it is that you can or can't support, you can have people off making decisions on their own, and you end up having to support it with whatever resources you have, whether you have them or not, whether you want to or not. Agreed? This book is a book called The Last Professors, The Corporate University and the Fate of the Humanities. This is written by a faculty member. He's an English faculty member at Ohio State. The reason why I know about this book, and a lot of people apparently have been looking at it from the faculty side, is because I'm on a panel with this guy in Orlando on Sunday. And he's going to be the speaker, and I'm on a panel that's supposed to sort of talk about his issues. It's going to be very interesting, because if you really want to know what some faculty are thinking about technology and where the university is moving, it's a really good book to read. Now, what Frank is saying, basically, when he says this trend, you have to understand in the context of how he's writing it, it's this trend. You know, it's not this trend. He's irritated about how technology is coming in and basically changing the way that the universities operate. He blames the for-profits, the University of Phoenix's, the Capellas, the Kaplans, and so forth, because they're ruining the business model. And his argument is that universities, as they once were about coming in and learning about the humanities and learning how to be just a better educated person, not so much about how to get a skill for a job. And so there's a lot of animosity toward technology and that sort of being the blame of why this change is happening, and that's what spun off the corporate universities. Now, what I would, I mean, I'm planning to have a really good time with this panel on Sunday, but I mean, if you look back, you can go back to when Harvard started had the idea for the concept of academic majors in 1910. Okay, if you want to go back, call Harvard and tell them they should have never put in academic majors because that ruined the whole idea of having this humanities approach to education. But where he really gets going is when he starts talking about the threat to courses. And we're going to talk a little bit about the CMS and how that's threatening to a lot of faculty, not those in this room, but others who are sort of pushing against any movement toward using a course management system or some kind of technology in the classroom or out. Here's the third group, the CFO. These are the folks that got to pay for whatever it is you buy, for the most part. I mean, not necessarily everything that you buy in IT, but for those that are going to be enterprise solutions, it's got to come out of the business office. And sometimes the business officer wants to know, what's the ROI? Now, how many of you are able to really give an ROI on an educational experience when it comes to how technology is used? It's very difficult, but that's sort of a bottom line when it comes to the financial person at the institution. So you've got all three of these folks, all three of these groups that might be making decisions, the technology and the IT people, you've got the academic folks, and you've got the business officers all making decisions at various times for various reasons. But the bottom line is all three of them need to be at the table whenever any kind of decision is made that involves technology. Would you agree, or would you say that that's not? Okay. How many of you see this on your campus right now at your institution where all three are at the table? How many of you see at least two of them? How many of you think it's just one of those three? One person in the back? How many of you don't know? Which is another really good question. How many of you in this room are actually at the table when these decisions are made? Okay. One of my issues, one of my pet peeves, is that so many times we make decisions in higher education in particular. Not that they're wrong decisions, but we make so many decisions that are related to not just technology, but how we are constructing different things on a campus, whatever it is, and we don't have the people at the table that are actually doing the work. And while I like to think of myself as understanding online education, I am not in the trenches of teaching online education. So it would be inappropriate of me to try to make decisions about what the faculty need and so forth, because I'm an administrator, I'm not teaching. So I think the same thing is true when you're talking about technology or anything else. You've got to have people at the table who are going to be doing the work. And I know everybody who is making the decisions probably wouldn't agree with that, but that's sort of how I look at it. All right, let's jump into the CMS. Now, and let me go ahead and state, first off, I apologize for the fact that Blackboard decided to call their courseware management system, CMS, because I understand, as I've been corrected, that most of you, many of you, when I say CMS, what do you think? Content management system, okay? So I understand that. Now, I am going to use CMS. I am not going to use LMS. I realize that people refer to Blackboard and others as LMSs. I do not. And I have reasons, because when I was looking at this stuff from the beginning, an LMS was very different. An LMS still, to me, is very different. It's for training. It's tracking things in a completely different way than a courseware management system. Okay? That's my opinion. I realize everybody refers to Blackboard as an LMS. To me, Blackboard is not an LMS because it doesn't do the things that an LMS would do. So when I say CMS, think with me, course management system, not content management system. That's what I'm talking about. Now, to back that up, and it's very timely. Sometimes things happen for a really good reason. The latest issue of EDUCAUSE Review, which landed with me about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, had several articles in it that were sort of relevant to IT and where IT certainly, but where it's going in the future. And Gerald Grochow had this article, and it's just a two-page opinion piece. But what I liked about this, and he's a retired CIO at MIT. What I found interesting about this, and this is something to think about, 5 or 6 years ago, you would not have seen the course management system as one of the essential things for the IT operation to keep going. Would you agree that you probably wouldn't say. It would have been, you know, we want to. But now, as he's saying, it's become essential. And he compares this to being strategic. In his article, and the way he's looking at strategic is more about those things that you're going to take a risk. You're going to see if they work, and then maybe at some point they'll become essential. The courseware management system now has become an essential part of the university on every campus. How many of you, and I'm sorry I keep polling people, but I find it interesting to see, how many of you are using an enterprise solution for your course management system across your entire campus? I mean, you've got that. How many of you would like to? How many of you wish you weren't? Okay. How many of you are Blackboard, Black CT, Angel? Okay. How many of you desire to learn? Moodle? Sakai? Rebels? Pearson? Anybody? Okay, but everybody's using some form of course management system in some way or another. You've got decreasing budgets to work with, but now you've got this other enterprise, this solution for teaching and learning that you're managing. Okay. Now, look at what Frank Donahue says. Referring to the courseware management system, he states, this convenience and ease of use could come at a tremendous cost. And he's already griped about the for-profits in his book. He's already been griping about the for-profits, how they're ruining, you know, higher education and the university as we know it. And now he's saying that the course management system, in his opinion, is a more immediate threat to the autonomy and the security of professors. Oh, my. This, to me, is where I fundamentally have a problem with people that see this and read this information, because it makes it sound like somehow this course management system is going to come in and completely ruin teaching. And it doesn't have to. But I'm going to get to that in a second about why we have to do something about that. I think I already know the... Well, now I want to know. Just shout it out. Who made the decision, if you know, on your campus on which CMS to purchase? College of Nursing, that's always a strong one. Who else?
CIO.
The state. The state, yeah.
Provost.
Faculty. I haven't heard anyone say a team yet.
Provost,
CIO. Okay. So it's kind of all over the map, right, of who makes the decision. There's no consistency of who's making that decision. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. I think sometimes what you'll find is a lot less griping from the people that are going to use it if there is some representation at the table. With the School of Nursing, I've worked with plenty of schools of nursing. You don't give them what they want, you're going to hear about it. So we want to make sure we please the schools of nursing because they are very strong on campuses. Now, does it really matter which one you choose? I am CMS agnostic. Anybody in here that's a vendor for one of these guys? Okay, I don't like any of them. I don't think any of them do what they say they're going to do. I don't think any of them do everything that our faculty wants them to do. Does that mean we don't use them? No. Okay, we're not in the business, in my office anyway, we're not in the business of creating, developing our own. I know for a while there was this trend of people were like, well, I'm not going to outsource with one of these people. I'm going to design our own. It's like, no, you're not. Not really. In the long run, you'll regret it. So does it matter which one you use? If I hear one more of these vendors say that they're the premier, you know, they are the ultimate solution, it's like, no, you're not. Every one of us are going to get a CMS, and we're going to figure out ways to work around the things that they don't do, right? And the one that's the best for you to use is the one that you can work around the easiest and make it work the way you want it to work, okay? So there is no one best. And I do get asked, and in the past I was asked, in years past, which technology is the best when you're delivering instruction? You know, is it video? Is it audio? Is it multimedia? There is none. There aren't any. There is no one solution. There is no one best, no more than there is one best CMS. Now, this is a question I have, and Marge Knox and I had a conversation about this. And I'm not looking for a number, because I don't think any of us would like to admit exactly how much we spend. But you look at how much you spend on your campus on a course management system. And you've got the licensing, and if you're hosting it or outsourcing the hosting, you've got that. You've got staff that are supporting it. You've got all kinds of expenses. How much, and I'm talking about the on-campus faculty right now, not the online, okay? The on-campus faculty. How much of that CMS do they really use? Anybody know? Anybody got any ideas? Okay. Yes, ma'am. And you find out that way? And you find out that way by polling them. I would argue, and I'm just looking at my own university system, very large system, 9 academic institutions, 6 health. I would argue that my system is just like anyone else's. Your on-campus faculty aren't using that CMS near to what you're paying for. Near, not even close to what you're paying for that CMS. When I talk to faculty and they say, well, I'm on campus, but I do use the CMS. I use Blackboard. I put my PowerPoint slides in there, and I put my syllabus, and I put my notes. And my comment back to them is, why don't you just email it? Why do you need a CMS to store your PowerPoint slides? So, and the problem is that when faculty are using the CMS, if they don't know what the attributes are and the different characteristics of the CMS, why would they do it any different? Now, is this your problem? Not necessarily. But I think you should know that when you're busting your humps trying to support the CMS, and if you're hosting it and taking care of everything, I don't think your faculty are using it anywhere like you would like for them to. Many of them will use them, that they'll do a lecture capture. And let me tell you, there is nothing worse, and this, I'm going to get on a pet peeve just a little bit. If a professor is not amazing as a speaker in the classroom, do you know what they look like when you capture them on video? And then you expect the student to go into the CMS so they can look at the captured lecture, okay? There are things that we're doing that don't make any sense at all pedagogically, but we're still using them with technology. We have so many faculty that when they're using the CMS, what they're basically doing is trying to do what they do in the classroom and move it online. And again, if they're just using it for storage, why do we need a CMS for that? Okay. Now, there is a problem with hybrid and blended courses when they're using the CMS. How many of you know if your campus is you have faculty who are teaching blended or hybrid courses, you know, part online, part face-to-face? And how many of you suspect people are doing that, but you don't know? Right? How many of you know that there's no one doing hybrid or blended? And this is part of our problem. We don't really know, and this is my point. And again, this isn't your issue, but I think if you're going to be working across departments and across to the academic side of the house and vice versa, you kind of need to know these things. The problem with hybrid or blended courses is that many times faculty who are trying to be innovative and want to do a blended course, maybe they decide that we're going to meet the first week of the semester, and we're going to meet the last week of the semester, and then we're going to do everything else online. Wonderful idea. They don't tell a soul. So the classroom sits empty that whole time. So basically you're wasting space instead of gaining space. Same is true if they decide they're going to teach Mondays and Wednesdays and let the students off on Fridays and do things online, but they don't tell anybody that they're not going to use the classroom on Fridays. This is to me, is the bigger problem of hybrid and blended learning. We're pushing it. We know it's a very effective way to deliver instruction. But at the same time, if no one knows that you're doing it, then you've wasted space. So if you're on your campus and people are talking about hybrid and blended courses and you happen to be at the table when they're talking about it, ask the question, is anybody telling the scheduler that we're not using that classroom? Especially if it's a classroom that you as IT are supporting. Be nice to know that it's not being used, right? All right, what does Colt McCoy have to do with Blackboard? Yes, sir.
Before you get off the topic of CMS, all the surveys and whatever that we've run locally seem to point to the fact that even though we still only have maybe 20% of our faculty actually activated courses in Blackboard, the students are clamoring.
They are. This is my point. You'll understand why Colt is on this shot.
Okay.
So I'm still on the CMS. Anybody have an idea of why I have his picture over here? Other than he's a great quarterback and cute. And the reason why he's on here, I have 2 daughters. And this is, you know, sometimes people accuse me of being a zealot for distance learning. Both my daughters go to the University of Texas at Austin. One of them just graduated, thank you, Jesus. And one is going to graduate in May, thank you, God. So they both have been at UT Austin. And I'm only using UT Austin as an example. This is not something that's just Austin. When I knew I was going to be talking about this and talking about the CMS, I was having lunch with my daughter, which, of course, I was buying recently. And I asked her, I said, Ricky, I'm going to be talking about CMS, course management systems, Blackboard. In the four and a half years that you were at UT, how did you, as a student, use Blackboard? And her comments back to me were sort of, they were the typical things. Well, the faculty who knew how to use it and put stuff in it, it was great because I could get to my notes, I could get to their notes, I could get to their slides, et cetera, et cetera. Said if they, you know, she had some faculty that said from the beginning of the class, don't bother going into Blackboard, even though I have a course shell. The only thing there is my syllabus. There will never be anything else there. Fine. You know, what are you going to do? Argue with the professor. So she said it was kind of all over the board. Never did they never, she said, in 4.5 years of being in Blackboard, they never used the discussion boards, which, okay, they're in face-to-face classes. This is a supplement. So discussion boards, maybe not. But she didn't have any faculty who used any more than posting their notes. There were no assessments. There were no group projects. There was nothing else that they did other than the syllabus and their slides. Which, by the way, looking at the slides, if you miss class, doesn't really help you. That'd be like, you know, if you looked at my slides, even if you don't get anything out of what I'm saying right now, you would get even less if all you did was see the slides. Okay. Now, why is Colt here? The other thing that she told me, and this is where I had to ask her twice if I heard her correctly. My daughter was you can't get a business minor at UT, you get a business foundation certificate. So she was in the business foundation certificate program. And as you might expect, a lot of the football players are also in business foundations certificate programs. She said when she was in, she got all excited. She said, I remember. When I was a sophomore, both my fall semester and spring semester terms, she was still living in the dorm. And she said, as soon as the course is open, she and her other girlfriends immediately looked at the rosters to see if Colt McCoy was in their class. That's how they used Blackboard. They looked at the course rosters in Blackboard to see if he was in their class. And some of them would literally go through drops and ads based on where they could see Colt McCoy was. Now, that's not exactly the use that we would hope they would have for Blackboard. But my point is, I don't think we ever asked the kids, the students, how they use it. I mean, we know they're clamoring for it, but yeah, they're clamoring for it, but how do they use it once there's content or something there? So I think that that's where we miss the boat. A lot of times in our office, we talk about, you know, the online experience, and my student and faculty support services group are really big on making sure that they're basically giving the students everything that they're going to need. You know, in the online environment, we have about 18,000 enrollments a year. So we've got a lot of students, you know, all over the place. But I always have to talk to my assistant director in that area because she's very compassionate and she has great ideas. And sometimes I'll go, but how do you know the students want that? We sit up in our administrative offices sometimes and we think we know what the students want. Not that you shouldn't give them everything, but maybe we should ask them what they want before we make decisions on doing something. So when it comes to the course management system or any other technology, when you guys are sitting down thinking about a new technology, bring in some students. And don't bring in the students that are working part-time in the IT department. You know, bring in some students from across the campus and ask them what they think and how they were going to use this particular technology. Did that answer your question about what you're talking about? Okay. I'm going to give you a little bit of information about the status of online. This is from the Sloan Consortium. They actually do a study every year that looks at the growth of online education. Over 4.6 million students took at least one online course in the fall of 2008, and that was a 17% increase from the fall of 2007. Now, in my organization, in the telecampus, from fall of 2007 from the fall of 2008 to the fall of 2009, this past fall, 30% increase in enrollments. Are you all seeing, do you know, are you seeing growth in any online courses that you're offering? Let me back up. How many of you are offering online courses from your campus, fully online courses that you know about? How many of you are offering fully online programs? Okay. How many of you are on campuses where you don't offer anything online? Private? Public? Private. Okay. But for those of you that are, you're seeing an increase, right? seeing this growth. Some of this has to do with the economy. Some of this has to do with the adult learner who's all of a sudden realized that there are these options available that they didn't realize before. So that's a lot of the growth. But it's interesting that the 17% growth that we saw in that past year exceeds the 1.2% growth that we saw in higher education in general. And higher education is growing like crazy. I mean, all of our campuses, not everyone, but I'd say the majority of our campuses are busting at the seams for space. I mean, it's just crowded. People are coming to school. They want to be on campus. They want to be online as well. So now we've got an opportunity to offer them both types. Unfortunately, sometimes people think that it's one or the other. Now, although there's all this growth, the baccalaureate institutions continue to be the least likely to consider online to be strategic. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're not doing it. They may just not think it's strategic. The second one, I hear quotes that are about this that really aren't stating what this says here. I think it's very interesting. Less than a third of the CAOs, the chief academic officers at institutions, believe that their faculty accept the value and legitimacy of online education. It's not saying that less than a third of the institutions believe that there's value and legitimacy with online. It says this is what the chief academic officers believe that their faculty think. Okay? Now, what that says to me, it's also very interesting that sometimes the chief academic officers may not really know exactly what their faculty are doing. The deans know that. Okay? So it's interesting to see the belief system of how the CIO is looking at what their faculty are thinking. There's no single approach that is being provided to faculty for training. No systematic approach. How many of you are aware of training for faculty on your campus if they're going to teach online? It has been very disappointing to me when I've been on different campuses, and again, not so much in my system now because we've moved past it. When I've been on other campuses as a consultant or something else, and I go in and I ask them, and we're talking about fully online, and we're asking, you know, I ask them, are you providing training for the faculty? Yes, we are. What is your training? Well, we have WebCT1, we have WebCT2. That is not what we're talking about. And I know you'll cringe when I say this, but I think you understand it as well. When you're talking about doing things online, developing and delivering education online, the technology is the easy part. Okay? I'm not saying that supporting it is not time-consuming and difficult, but for the person who's going to deliver the content, the technology is the easiest part. Trying to build the course, develop the course, produce the course is much more complicated. And so if you're engaged in any of this training that's going on, please try to tell people. You teach people how to use the CMS last. You teach them how to develop and design a course first. And unfortunately, we either see people learning how to use the CMS and not learning how to design a course. Because honestly, unless you have professors that you're working with who have gone through instructional technology or educational technology programs, they have never taken a course on instructional design in their life. Nor should they have. But when you start developing a course online, fully online, if all you're going to do is put your PowerPoint slides up there and maybe some of your notes and give a test at the end, that's not a course. That's not a course at all. And so what you have to do is help people understand really how do you develop content that's going to be delivered this way. There's nothing wrong with teaching them how to use the CMS. You want them to know how to use the CMS. But that should not be the primary focus. And if you're going to do it right, the technology people need to at least also say, hey, what about some instructional design for these people? We need to bring somebody in to help them with this. So I encourage you, if you ever have a voice in that decision, to be sure and say something about it. Let me talk just a little bit about course development and course production. How many of you are in this room that are involved in some form or another of helping somebody put content in an online or digital format? Okay, just a few. Course development and course production are two different things. Course development is when faculty are doing what they need to do to develop the content. Course production is when the designers and the multimedia people bring that content to life. When we develop courses fully online and oversee the development of courses that are fully online, this is not a very fast process. If it's done quickly, it looks like it. And if it's only going to be some slides, which is just, you know, here's something about PowerPoint that people don't always think about, particularly on the academic side. And again, I know the folks that are faculty here know what I'm about to say and don't do this. But we have so many people that think this is content. This is not content. This is a presentation tool. The reason these slides are up here are to make sure that I don't go off on some other tangent instead of staying on topic. That's why I have these slides. This is not my content. That's why I said earlier, when somebody says after, you know, you go up after somebody speaks and you say, oh, can I get a copy of your slides? Well, yeah, you can have a copy of the slides, but that's really not what I was saying. The same thing is true when you're talking about the academic world and teaching. The PowerPoint slides that a faculty member uses in a classroom in a face-to-face setting are not the content. So if they're just wanting to load their slides into a course, they're basically gypping the student from all of the other content that they're going to be giving, that they would be giving face-to-face. So, you know, you try to make people understand that that's, you can't just go the easy route and put your notes up. You've got to really think through, what are the anecdotes that I gave in the class? What are the stories that I told that sort of helped the content come to life? That's what goes into the online course. And that's the big difference between using a course shell to supplement a face-to-face course and actually using it for teaching and learning. Does that make sense, that there's a difference? I know some of you may be going, I don't really care, but it's important to me. And because I get to stand up here, I get to tell you what's important to me. And it is important that when we're using technology, that we're using it appropriately. We have too many times that people get wrapped up in the sexiest new technology that comes down the road. I remember when streaming media sort of hit the scene. And all of a sudden, we had to do everything with streaming media. You know, we're going to stream a video of this, stream a video of that. Well, why? You know, if you're trying to show me how to conduct an appropriate interview in a business setting, yeah, give me a video of that. I want to see that. I want to see the facial reactions. I want to see the body language. If you're trying to teach me technical writing, I don't need to see you. And I don't need to see you moving around while you're talking if all I'm doing is learning how to write. Okay? So it bothers me that sometimes when the newest technology comes along, people tend to gravitate toward it like it's the new solution. You guys and gals have a job to help educate people that that's not always the way to do it, particularly your faculty. Again, how many faculty are here? Okay. Not you, right? Okay. I want to talk a minute about quality. Now, the reason why I bring this up, and you may say, why do I need to know about quality in online education? Part of it is because many of you are supporting a CMS and have your hands on the CMS. Okay, if you have your hands on the CMS and you're in the CMS and you're hosting the CMS, if the folks from the accrediting agencies come in to your institution and decide that your faculty are not doing what they should be doing with the CMS might go away. The hosting might go away. You might not have the job that you have if an accreditor came in and blasted you for the way that the courses were being handled. So that's why it matters. Is it likely to happen? Probably not, but I have been on reaffirmation for accreditation visits for institutions where there have been issues and they almost lost the opportunity to deliver their programs. These principles are best practices for electronically delivered certificate and degree programs have been around for a while, and they've gone through some changes. But the main thing is the states in our state, how many of you are Texas people? Our Higher Education Coordinating Board has adopted these best practices. Their expectation is that when we're offering courses online or electronically, in any way, that they are meeting these best practices. Our accreditor for the Southern states is SACS, the Southern Associations of Colleges and Schools, or Association of Colleges and Schools. How many of you know about SACS? Okay. Ah, just love them. One of the things about our regional accreditors is that they've sort of come a long way when it comes to technology. They used to be much more conservative. These folks that are coming in with teams are a little more progressive. Not as good as some of the other regional accreditors, but we're getting there. They are the ones that are coming to your campus. They have adopted, every single regional accreditor in the United States has adopted these principles, these best practices. So they're looking at anytime there's a team of accreditor or accrediting team that comes to your campus and they're looking at online courses, they are looking at these particular principles. The folks that are in IT can help the academic side of the house with tools to make sure that they are meeting these principles. Now, I'm going to show you an example. There's a lot. Any of you use Quality Matters? Does that ring a bell? Anybody? Quality Matters. What we did, and I'm showing you this, that something that we developed in the telecampus only because it is now open source, and it's available on sourceforge.net. So that's why I'm showing you this. It's a great tool that was created by our folks at the telecampus. This is an interactive tool that is basically designed where it's open in such a way that you can actually tweak it in any way that you like. You can put your own colors, your own school logo, you can put your own rubric in. Whatever it is that you want, you can put into this system. Okay. I'm not sure what's going on with my connectivity. Let me just tell you about it. It's an interactive tool, and it allows you to, for example, when it comes to you, if you go to SourceForge and you download this, it's already going to have the rubric that's set up with these best practices for electronically delivered courses. So it's going to be set up in that way. What's going to happen is when you are ready to review a course, there are ways for you to rate different parts of the course related to those principles, those best practices, and you get a score. Now, the thing that's nice about this is if you have somebody reviewing the courses and it comes back with a score and comments, you can send out a report, print out a report, and give that to the faculty member that's designing the course, so they can see where these problems lie. It's also nice in that if you don't like the rubric that we've chosen, you can go in and change it. So this is completely available for you to customize any way you like. And I encourage you, if you don't have a tool already, and even if you're using something like Quality Matters or you've developed something on your own, the point that this is interactive, and you all could build it yourself when you look at it, but it's already there. And so it's available for you to use and customize it in any way that you'd like. We do like to acknowledge that, you know, one of the things about when you're doing all of this quality stuff is that if you go all the way back, it goes back to Cal State Chico, and sometimes they don't really get the credit for kind of starting this before it evolved into some of the best practices and then Quality Matters and so forth. But it's been around for a while, the idea of looking at quality using these different rubrics for online education. So did everybody see where you can get that at SourceForge? Okay. I didn't even know what SourceForge was until we put something on there. Here's some other issues to kind of think about. How many millions of dollars are we spending? I'm sorry, how many millions of dollars are you spending on upgrading the wireless system for a campus? Okay. I mean, you're spending that much, and how many faculty are telling students to shut down their laptops when they walk in the classroom? Does that happen on your campuses where faculty are saying no laptops open? Okay. The same thing is true with these. So if you're spending all this money to make the campus wireless, and yes, some of it's for the dorms, I understand that, but the goal is to make everything wireless, why are faculty telling them to shut down their laptops? Why are they doing that? They're gaming, or they're checking email, or they're on Facebook, or they're blogging. How many of you in this room right now have checked your email since I started talking? Right. How many of you have tweeted? How many of you have blogged? How many of you have, what'd you say? We're not faculty. That was good. How many of you have checked Facebook? Oh, come on. Are you guys that geeky? You don't check Facebook when you're sitting here? I'm just kidding. You're lying. But everybody's doing email. And so my point is the faculty have to get to that point where they can get past it. Because I use this phrase. I was on a panel a while back earlier this year where we were talking about state regulatory problems for online courses. You know, states trying to regulate which online courses can come into this state and which online courses can go into that state. It's a huge mess. I mean, it's a huge mess, and I'm involved in a national group that's trying to look at this. But I made the statement then on the panel. You're trying to do this, it's like putting a cloud around the internet. Okay? I'm sorry. It's trying to put a fence around a cloud. It'd be nice if I got my own quote straight. It's like putting a fence around a cloud. It's not going to happen. Because I was thinking about needing to cough. That's why I did that. So it's the same thing here. If the faculty think they're going to stop the students from using their electronic gadgets, their communication tools, It's like putting a fence around a cloud. It's not going to happen. And so when you're involved in this training for faculty, those of you that have some influence, if it's for on campus, using smart classrooms, et cetera, try to help them think through ways that they might use the technology. I don't know if it's Cedar or the blood pressure medicine I'm on, but I'm telling you, Tell, when you, some of you can relate to this, but I'm only 51. I'm on blood pressure medicine, and the one thing he told me when he got me on it 2 weeks ago, and I wish he wouldn't have said it, sometimes people get a dry cough, and it's like it's been in... I keep wanting to think it's the Cedar. You know, those of you that haven't been here before, welcome to Cedar Haven, but I'm hoping that it's the Cedar, not the medication. He could stay off Facebook. That's what he should have said. I should. My daughters would like for me to stay off Facebook. How many of you have a Facebook account? How many of you are on it because your kids are? How many of you got on it in the first place because your kids are, but now you're on it because all your friends are? Okay. That talks about it. Okay, so going back to the idea that you have all these students that have laptops and they have PDAs and they're in the classroom and the faculty don't want them to use it. What needs to happen is the faculty need to start thinking, and Frank Donahue would just, he'd probably yell at me for saying this. How about helping the faculty understand how to incorporate the technologies into what they're teaching? Send the students on a scavenger hunt online. You know, let them use their PDA, you know, do a map quest, do something to engage them. But then the other part of it is, then let it go. You're not going to stop it. And I think the more that they bring attention to it, the more the kid wants to bring it, you know, have it out. If it's out, eventually, we know, they look at things. And you know what? At the university setting, if they want to spend their time doing that and then look at your PowerPoint slides later in Blackboard in the course management shell, which you could have just emailed to them, then so be it. That's their choice. But this idea that somehow there's going to be control over that, it's just not going to happen. And I think the more that we fight it, the worse it's going to be. Now, technology and academic dishonesty, again, talking about laptops and PDAs and people, you know, taking pictures of tests and texting and so forth. Who thinks it's more often, there's more academic dishonesty in online? How many think there's more on campus? Okay. How many think it's the same? There's really no real difference. And it depends on, you know, I'm not counting diploma mills that are online. I'm talking about legitimate online programs. You don't see any more academic dishonesty online than you do face-to-face. The types of academic dishonesty may be different, but as far as the amount, you know, people who are going to cheat, they're going to cheat. It doesn't matter if they're in class, online. People who are not going to cheat are not going to cheat. And if somebody wants to cheat, by God, they're going to find a way to do it. Now, at the graduate level, there are two disciplines that have more cheating, more academic dishonesty, let me be correct, than others. On campus. Who do you think they are? Which disciplines? Business. That's number one.
Education.
No way. Educators aren't going to cheat. Kidding? Law school. Law students and business students have more charges of academic dishonesty than the other areas, other disciplines. Isn't that kind of interesting?
Well, it's practice.
It is. It's practice. They're trying to figure out what they're going to be suing against later. All right, here's our obsession. How many of you in this room, and I want you to be honest, you've been at work, you realize you leave your phone at home, your PDA, even though you have a computer and a perfectly functioning phone in the office, you get in the car either at lunch or as soon as you can and go home and get it. Anybody? Oh, you people lie if you say you don't. Only reason I can is because I live 30 miles away from here, or I would. That we have this obsession. Okay, it doesn't matter if I'm sitting in my office, I have my computer really running high end, I've got my telephone right there on my desk, speakerphone even, woo, all kinds of things. But I will go home and get this. Because I have to have it. Okay? Are you all not connected to these things? Okay, am I the only one that likes to have it with me all the time? Okay, I'm just checking. I'm what? What'd he say? Say it again. Yeah. That's because I'm not an IT person. If I was IT, it would already be attached here and attached here and attached here and attached here. I actually have to put mine in what we call a purse, okay? Okay, so all of you that have one of these, Mr. Smarty, everybody take yours out. Take it out. And it's already out. I know. Everybody got them? All right. I want you to turn to the person next to you, and I want you to trade with them. Hand it over. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Come on. Everybody, hand it over. Oh, come on, people. Go ahead. You can let go, I promise. Okay, now, does everybody have somebody else's? Let's see if it's password protected. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. So, all right. Now, here's my question. Now, I didn't say, I didn't say give it back. No, no, no.
Let me see.
How many of you have Blackberries? Blackberries? How many of you have iPhones? All right, all you iPhone people, do not look down at the Blackberry people. Okay? All you snotty iPhone people who think, oh, I got an iPhone. Look at all the apps I have, and you don't have nearly the apps I have. Okay, so now, hold on. Now, hold on to that other device and try not to look at your neighbor because you know they're looking at it, and they're thinking, I wish I had this. Okay, but I don't. No, okay, but now, see, this is the part where I think it's more you. And I'm surprised I didn't hear this. She's just so distraught. But it does sound like you whining. Okay, so now, let me ask again. How many of you go home to get this thing? Well, if you leave it at home, how many of you go home to get it? Unless you're a person that has it attached everywhere. Okay. We are attached to these. Now, do you think the students are attached also? They are. And they're not going to, I can guarantee you, they are not going to let go of these things. So, again, the idea of having them in the classroom, you know, having them in a session like this, you're going to have to just deal with it because it's not going to change. Oh, yeah, you can give them back now. Oh, y'all are so good because you didn't give them back until I said anything. Will you all be my children? Do you feel better now? How many of you had sweaty palms when that was going on? Especially when I said, let's see if there's a password protection. It's like, I almost did. I was going to go, yeah, let's just see. And then watch people go, don't touch the screen. You can hold it, but don't touch the screen. All right, let's look at the future a little bit about with IT and online. I'm not going to sit here at an EDUCAUSE event and not at least have the quote from the president, who is a friend of mine, because I know better. I mean, I'm going to make sure that I have something of their Diana's. But Diana always has great things to say. And this is something I pulled out of also the most recent EDUCAUSE review. And the reason why I brought these two quotes is because I really do believe that the value that you bring in IT spans the entire university, entire college. There isn't one part of the institution that is not dependent in some way on IT. Okay? If you look at the second quote, Peter Drucker, he said this in 1997, and I still remember reading this. 30 years from now, the big university campuses will be relics. Universities won't survive. Okay, that means in 2027, big universities are going to be gone. Anybody believe that? Some people still believe that? You know, the way I look at this is, and the reason I put these both up there is because a lot of people tend to think that it's because of technology that this second thing will happen. That it's because of the influx of technology, it's going to completely change the university so much, and the demand from students that want an alternative kind of education will make the institutions go away. I think universities will survive. I do, and I hope they do. And I say that because with my daughters, what I want for them and would have wanted for them when they were on campus is the choice. I wanted them to go to a campus because I wanted them to have the experience of living away from home in a relatively safe environment. But ideally, I'd love for them to have been able to say, well, okay, here I need to take this history class. I can take it online. I can have the lecture streamed to me or sent to me across the cable network of the university. I can go sit in the classroom. I have a choice for every one of these courses. Because if it's me, I would have loved that choice when I was going through my doctoral program, because the statistics classes, I would have been front row center. I would have been sitting right on the front row. But when it came to some of the other theory courses, I would have been happy being at home nursing one of my two children, because that was right in the middle of my doctoral program, and not having to drive to Austin. So it was, you know, to have a choice, to me, that's what's going to drive the universities in the future. Not so much technology and not so much students wanting alternative methods. It's going to be about choice. I mean, real choice of course by course by course. Now, why should you worry about it? University of Phoenix Online MBA has 16,000 annual enrollments. Now, granted, you compare that to Harvard's face-to-face program of only 900. The point of that is they're educating a hell of a lot more MBAs than Harvard is. Will one day somebody think that that means something? I don't know. Harvard actually has a policy in place. There will be no online courses. Now, I don't know if that'll change, but that is their policy right now. EduVentures predicts that the online revenues will increase by 33% a year for the next several years. Social networking, I talked about Facebook. There is a lot more going on Facebook or other social networks than just social. There's interactions that are happening. There are groups that are being formed. Granted, right now it's almost all social, but little by little we're seeing more and more interactions that are related to academics and things that are of import beyond socialization. And the one thing about online education is that it doesn't have to be all one or the other. And a lot of people think that if you go the route of online education, the entire university is going to go online, everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket, and the face-to-face opportunities will go away. It does not have to be that way, but everybody has someone on their campus that thinks that. The last video I'm going to show before I start shutting down, another quote from Frank Donahue is that students, not professors, will ultimately determine the future of education. And I do believe that. This is a guy, well, I'll let you hear him. This is his idea about the future of higher education.
I was trying to put the camera on my laptop, and it just kept falling off. So I found this log, and I put the camera on the log. And I was thinking more about the domino effect, and I talked about that in another video. And I think a lot of people at my college, it's like a really small college. I think a lot of people are going to see my videos, and it's just going to, like, catch fire. It's going to catch on like a California wildfire. People are just going to make hundreds of videos because they're going to see my videos. And I think I could start a revolution of video making. And I think I can inspire other people to make their own videos and get their thoughts out there. And I think that once it starts with my college, it'll just like catch on. It'll be like Facebook. You know how like Facebook just caught on, and like pretty soon, like, we won't even have Facebook anymore. We'll just have like the internet. We'll have YouTube. We'll have people from all different colleges like making videos about Jesus or making videos about whatever they want. You know, like imagine if you could get inside of the classroom, inside of like Harvard, Yale, Princeton. Imagine how stimulating that would be for your mind. Like, imagine the possibilities of education. I want to change it. I want to catalyze this process. I believe it's like a chemical reaction. And it's gonna take off once more college kids start doing it. And that's the thing about, like, when you're in college, you have a lot of time. So you should. I think all college students should be doing this, and we should be recording classes. And pretty soon, education won't cost so much money. We won't have to take like the SAT and like all these standardized tests to get into college, and education will just be free, and we'll learn from each other, and it'll put some teachers out of work, but then they can work in other areas. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's how it's going to happen.
Now, that's one student's view of where he thinks education should go. One student. Okay? Multiply that of everybody, all the students and their opinions about where education should go. And how would you like to support all of his ideas with your IT infrastructure every time he comes up with something? Now, if you will indulge me for just a couple of minutes, you can look at this. These are some events that I would call your attention to. But before I shut down, I want to say something to you that I hope will inspire you a little bit in what you do as IT, for the most part, professionals or instructional technology professionals. Last Thursday, I drove to my hometown of Galveston for a friend's funeral. And this friend of mine, Harry, was diagnosed with small cell lung cancer on January 15th, and he died 3 weeks later at 51. On Monday this week, a friend of mine I went to college with in San Marcos down the road died after complications from cancer. I have another friend who is doing great. She's leukemia patient, or leukemia survivor, I guess, and she takes a pill called Gleevec, which keeps her alive and wouldn't have 20 years ago. But as I was driving down last week and as I was driving back after the funeral, you know, you go to these things and you think, these funerals, and you start thinking, you know, about, oh, have I done anything in my life worthwhile? You know, what am I doing with my life? I hope that I'm making a difference. You know, the kinds of things that happen when you start, you know, those of you that are old enough start losing some of your friends. And I kind of related it to, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to be talking about this next week. And I kind of started thinking about how, you know, one of these days we're going to have a cure. Okay? We're going to have a cure for all kinds of cancers. One of these days it's going to happen. Now, those of you that are in IT and you're working, maybe you're overseeing a help desk, maybe you're actually having students do help desk, maybe you're the one who's on the help desk, and you get the umpteenth call from the same student that doesn't have their computer on. Or, God forbid, you get the call, or you get a call from a faculty member, a researcher, who's dealing with some issue with IT, and they've called you 15 times. Or, God forbid, you get the administrator call who has trouble with their computer and you're over there trying to figure it out. Or if you're a faculty member and you're teaching face-to-face or online and you've got a student that's driving you absolutely insane. Or if you're a developer of those online courses. Somewhere out there, whether it's the generation you're teaching or those that are coming later, there's going to be a someone or someones that are going to figure this out. You may not know it. And you may feel that sometimes you're not appreciated for the work that you do related to technology or teaching or whatever it is. But I want you to think about the fact that you may actually end up touching the one or the ones who end up coming up with a cure, whether it's cancer or something else. So while you may never know it, you yourselves may have an influence on the future of the world. I know that's sort of out there. But the reason I say it is because I think sometimes we're not appreciated for what we do. It's taken for granted. And sometimes you get frustrated because you've taken that umpteen thousandth call from the same person that doesn't know how to turn the computer on. Next time you're doing that, think about that that could be someone who goes on one day to conduct some research that could change the world. So I want you to think about that. And while you're thinking about that, I want you to know that I appreciate it. And I appreciate what you do. And I want to thank you for what you do, because I think it does make a difference in so many lives. Thank you very much.
Darcy Hardy from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Southwest Regional Conference. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.